This is Hidden Tillers Live with Tony Bruschi and Robin Drake.
The retrial is not going to be a rerun. The evidence in the Alec Murdaugh retrial, the rules have changed. Becky Hill has a criminal conviction. 3 years of additional proceedings have produced material that didn't exist when the first jury deliberated, but the state has advantages too, including every word Murdaugh said on the stand. Eric Faddis, defense attorney, is with myself and Robin Drake breaking down all of this as we discuss what the new Murdaugh trial might look like. One of the people who I'm very interested in hearing more of her story, she's been on the show, she's talked about it. It's Blanca right. Simpson. That was Murdaugh's housekeeper who was there the day after everything happened. She was in there. She noticed, this is odd, Maggie's pajamas are put out in the laundry room. Like, she doesn't do that. That's not something Maggie ever did. Maggie's car is moved, and the seat is way back, like someone larger went in there and moved the seat. She also talks about a white truck that was mysteriously on the property that day that a lot of people didn't talk about. There's allegations of an officer that was not part of the local authority, but was there kind of by happenstance, by chance, because somebody's vehicle broke down and then they gave a ride to some other officers to get out there, and then this person happened to be there and that person happened to get a $5,000 check from Alec Murdaugh shortly thereafter, and it was to supposedly be a loan to his parents. There's a lot of weird shit that went on around this case that was never litigated, that was never in this, that does potentially point to other people involved. Blanca Simpson even has said it so much so on this show of something to the effect of she believes Alec is responsible, but she does believe that there were essentially fixers or something of that nature, people who would come in and kind of clean up Alec's mess, if you will. So there seems to be a lot of other pieces here that haven't really been thoroughly investigated, and I feel like they could go in any direction. It depends who, I guess, grabs them out of the claw machine first. What are your thoughts on all this? I mean, might we see a very different trial with very different motives and very different theories being brought to light?
Oh, I think there are going to be substantial changes. And I think the defense would be well served to try to continue to work up this alternative suspect theory that there was someone else involved here. And perhaps these sort of curious, suspicious, unusual observations by the housekeeper and others might go towards that theory. And in fact, you know, if that stuff wasn't thoroughly investigated at the time that this happened, you know, Alec Murdaugh's counsel can ask the cops on the stand, hey, like, did you do DNA testing on Maggie's clothes that were left out when she would never leave them out like that? Did mm-hmm. you do DNA testing on her vehicle that appeared to have the seat pushed back? Did you look into any of that to try to determine who did this, or had you already decided it must have been Alec? You know, there are ways that this could really blow up based on these new developments, and things could really change in the second trial.
Yeah, do you think, you know, from the viewpoint of the jurors, even though they're not supposed to have any former knowledge of the other case and everything, you know, the likelihood is slim to none. If the prosecution introduces a whole new set of theories and motives based on new information like this, do you think that from the standpoint of not just public, but really the jurors, does that undermine the credibility of the prosecution, you think? Does it cause even more doubt, or should they try to double down in some way on what they already had?
I've seen cases, Robin, where the prosecution's theory and theme in the first trial and the theory and theme in the second trial are almost completely different. And so but the thing is, the jury in the second trial wouldn't hear about that. They wouldn't hear that the prosecution changed their tune and are thinking that this happened in an entirely different way or for an entirely different reason the second go around. So jury's not going to hear about that unless they have prior knowledge of the case.
Right, which is hard.
All the more reason for changing menu.
Yeah.
What about Alex? Let's talk about anything that was said in that first trial. Alec on the stand specifically, the snot show and all. It was like a sprinkler of snot.
You showed that picture the other day. I almost died. Yeah. Bad imagery.
It was a snot sprinkler. And I was watching Corey Richards this morning doing hers, and I'm like, she needs more snot. She really needs to murder all this. And 5 minutes later, we had snot. I just want to say bravo. I mean, that was a nice little nod there to Alec, Corey. I know you didn't really mean to do that.
Snorting pepper from the the prison. From the prison cafeteria. That's what they're doing.
The question is, obviously, the snot show. Eric, what can any of that come into play here? Or is it like that never happened? Like everything that was said on the stand under oath, is it erased? It doesn't exist on the record anymore? Or, I mean, if Alec were to take the stand at this trial and say things that are different or contradictory to what he said the first time, can any of that be brought up? Or is this a clean slate?
It is likely not a clean slate on that front at all. The judge has wide discretion to determine what evidence comes in at trial, but prior sworn testimony from a defendant, I think that the likelihood that is going to come in is extremely high in favor of the prosecution. And what it does too, Tony, is it really handcuffs Murdoch's ability to change their defense, to make pivots, to make adjustments, because, like you said, if he gets on the stand in trial too and says something totally different, prosecutor is going to go, hey, play the tape where you said the exact opposite of that, and you're crying to this jury trying to get their emotions involved to get sympathy for you. And so that's one peril of a defendant testifying. If there is a retrial, that testimony is usually set in stone, and defense can't really deviate from that.
You know, it'll be really interesting because we haven't heard of any jailhouse calls or visits that Murdoch's had, at least that I've seen. And I would really wonder about the types of things and who he said them to after he's convicted behind bars, not knowing that this was going to happen. Or maybe he was, you know, hoping this was going to happen, so he kept shut up. So I really wonder if there's going to be his own leakage that might undermine him as well.
Yeah, no, I think, this prior testimony and then anything that's happened subsequent to that, the prosecution, I'm sure, has interns reviewing hours and hours of jail calls. I've had to do it before. It's arduous. But yes, that's being done, I'm sure.
Proving reasonable doubt is the goal. And that's all they have to do. They don't have to come up with a reason. They didn't have to come up with a reason the first time. Might they want to come up with something this time? Might they want to present... Yeah, the housekeeper even saw that white truck out here on the property. Yeah, they didn't test this or that, because there's a lot of incompetency that did happen on the investigation. And a lot of it, I think, was initially, in my opinion, to benefit Murdaugh, to be like, oh, we're not going to be intrusive on you. We know you didn't do, you know, it was they were looking at him not necessarily with suspicion, I feel like, right off the bat. And for whatever reason, because it still doesn't make a lot of sense. Well, if you don't think it's him, then why the hell are you not testing all these things, these door handles, all these places that would make sense to be looking at? So incompetence is a big thing in this trial. How much do you think they're going to lean into the police investigation or the gazillion missteps which took place in this and say, see, reasonable doubt. If they'd only done their job fully, we might have a better picture, but we don't and we can't. So you got to let them go.
Right. You know, and that can be a very compelling argument, especially, you know, I think in our modern culture, there's a little bit more, I don't know if skepticism is the right word, but people don't just completely accept what law enforcement says as gospel and, oh, they must have done everything right. And they're always the good guys. I think that folks are seeing it a little differently now. And that can go a long ways at a jury trial. And I think that, like I said, defense really has to come up with some plausible alternative. Who else could have done this? Is it that weird Eddie guy and that, like, you know, fake suicide insurance scam thing? Is it somebody from Paul Paul's boating incident where he killed somebody right when he was drunk, allegedly. And I think they've got to crystallize that piece a little bit more, add it to law enforcement incompetence. That could be a recipe for reasonable doubt.
And I mean, one of the things that can really back up that, and I'm not trying to give the Murdaugh team any sort of ammunition here, but Blanca Simpson has made the statement after all of this that when she went to law enforcement and was trying to tell them the stories of what she had witnessed, the things she told us, she's told many other people, she told in her book, they told her, allegedly, according to her, to seek mental health help. Not like, this is really tough, I hope you get some help, you know, to help deal. Like, more like, go get some mental, you're crazy, you got to go, you know, that sort of way is the way she alleges it was said. So it's like, ooh, that might not land well with a jury where you're like, hey, I'm the housekeeper, I know these people pretty well, probably more than most human beings. I have valuable information and the police told me to go see a shrink. That doesn't necessarily land well with a jury in terms of evaluating a thorough investigation.
That could almost be a linchpin for the defense in my appraisal. Look, especially when we're talking about possible alternative suspects. Hey, you've got somebody who's so proximal to this family, so proximal to this situation, who made some unusual observations. And instead of following up on those, you told her, hey, it sounds like you're crazy. And had the police followed up on that, maybe they would have found the real killer, according to Murdaugh. You know, I think that that just sort of crystallizes the alleged failures on behalf of law enforcement to thoroughly try to determine who else may have been involved and could be really compelling a trial.
Yeah, I see her definitely as a linchpin just because of the proximity and the objectivity she seems to have in it, the way she's presenting it, because she is, you know, daily contact, routine contact, close proximity, and she's not a family member. And the fact that she's able to be so cognitive and objective in her observations without much motive, it looks like. So, you know, there's gains from, you know, from notoriety, but not to the extent of being willing to put yourself out there. So under a microscope. So, yeah.
It will be fascinating. Blanca is going to be here on the show in the coming weeks. I don't have the exact date yet, but we've been talking, and it'll be interesting to get her reaction as to all this. I know right now she's in shock about shock. She knew it was coming, you know, but no matter what, sometimes even when you know, it hits you hard.
What's shocking, you think, to her?
I don't know. I mean, just. I knew it was going to happen. I think we all kind of, I had a feeling it was going to happen. Mm-hmm. But when it did happen, even I was like, wow, is this happening?
Yeah.
I think it's just kind of that, where you know it's coming. I mean, I was rooting for it to happen, not because I want to talk about Alec Murdaugh for the next 3 years. I mean, it's good for business, but because come on.
Here's what I'm really curious about. You know, it's not just from her, because I know there's been a lot of people saying I'm shocked by this. And it's an interesting emotion to explore, only because if the shock is because of fear, it would be really prudent, I think, for people to understand from those people that are most shocked, if it's because of fear, fear of what? And so being able to drill that down might give prosecution some more to really leverage and go on, because if people are in fear that it's overturned, and even the glimmer of possibility he has more of an impact back in the community again, I mean, if that's having ripples of fear, I think really drilling down on that's important.
Yeah. No, I'd agree. I agree. I don't know what the cause. I think it's probably a different shock for different people, depending on how they're related to the case, honestly. Your thoughts in the comment section. Are you shocked that this is happening? Never say never.
Actually, that's a final question for you, Eric. So had it not been for Becky Hill, do you think that they would have been still overturned like this because of the financial stuff, or was it just Becky alone?
I think there's a high likelihood, Robin. Those other acts, evidence, putting forth evidence of alleged crimes that are not charged in a case, makes a dude look totally bad, could color a jury's perception. Courts, appellate courts, are really wary of those. So I think it's a reasonable likelihood it would have been overturned even absent Becky Hill's misconduct.
with or without Becky.
Yeah, I'll throw her a sliver of grace on that one.
There you
one,
go,
right?
Becky. Might have happened either way.
I gave you a hairpin.
But just know it mainly happened because of you. So have that with your coffee. There you go. All right, your thoughts in the comment section on Substack and YouTube. We'd love for you to weigh in. We'll continue the conversation right there. Robin's latest book, It's Not All About Me, available wherever you get books. Go check it out. And Eric Faddis, defense attorney, former prosecutor, as always. Thank you, gentlemen, for being here and giving us your insight, as always. Until next time, for Eric, for Robin, for Todd, I'm Tony. We will talk again real soon.
Want more on this case and others? Then press subscribe now and don't miss a moment of true crime coverage from Tony Brewski and the Hidden Killers podcast.
Normally in these ads, you'd expect someone like me to ask you to buy something, but I want to ask you to do something different. I'm Dave Farenthold, and I'm a reporter for the New York Times. I'm an investigative reporter, which means that I follow the money, inside of government and outside of government. The point of my job is to find things people are trying to hide. It involves talking to lots of people. It involves looking through lots and lots of documents. And if there weren't folks like me to go beyond the surface to understand who is really shaping what the government does, the public will be left in the dark about what the government's doing with your tax money, what the government's doing to you through regulations and spending. If you're like me and you think this kind of journalism is important, seek out a news source that does firsthand, fact-based reporting. If that's the New York Times, thank you. If that's your local paper, that's great too, because where you get your information matters.